You know, we go and validate our own instructions for our own device, and it's trying to get out of that silo and maybe provide some guidance that, hey, this would be a lot easier if we just validated toward this AIMEE protocol than trying to come up with our own. I think it's a win-win-win. The regulators want it. Healthcare facilities want it. Medical device manufacturers want it. It's just not an easy thing to do.
In the midst of constant commotion in the healthcare industry, one unified voice rises above the rest. A beacon bent on banishing biofilm. They are sterile processing professionals who clean and sterilize their way to improved outcomes, and their patient safety victories often go unseen. This is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we give voice to that global force fighting dirty all around the world. It's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Ralph Basile, Vice President of Marketing and Regulatory Affairs for Healthmark Industries. He is a member of AIMEE Sterilization Standards Committee, including co-chair for Work Group 12. He is a U.S. delegate to ISO TC198, Work Group 12, and Work Group 13. He is also a member of several ASTM committees related to medical devices, including co-chair for ASTM FO4-1517. Well, guys, I'm really excited for this episode once again. Ralph's a very engaging and exciting personality to have on the show, and I know we're going to be diving into ISO and AIMEE and work groups, but I think our listeners are going to be very pleased with the direction of the industry, and Ralph's going to give us a nice look into that.
Absolutely, Justin. I think it's going to be really fun to talk about where a lot of those standards that we all reference, you know, AIMEE, we all reference ISO, and just to talk about where are those standards coming from.
In our tagline, guys, we say that we talk to the biggest names in sterile processing, and it's hard to find a bigger name than Ralph Basile, obviously, with all of his representation on all of these committees and his commitment to the industry at large. Super excited to talk to him today.
As a reminder, you can subscribe to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, or search for Beyond Clean on your favorite podcast application. We can also be heard on the Sterile Education app, available on iTunes and Android.
Healthmark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. Are you ready for AIMEE ST108 released in 2023? Evoqua Water Technologies can help you prepare. Our water experts participated in the development of the new standard and understand the impact medical device reprocessing has on patient safety. Evoqua offers water purification systems specifically designed to help sterile processing departments meet the critical water requirements and strict standards of AIMEE ST108. With locations across the United States, we stand by ready to help you with your sterile processing water needs so you can focus on your core priority, patient safety. Contact Evoqua today for a site audit and ST108 guidance. Visit www.evoqua.com/beyondclean to learn more. That's EVOQUA.com/beyondclean.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Ralph Basile, Vice President of Marketing and Regulatory Affairs for Healthmark Industries. And Ralph, I just want to start by saying what a big supporter Healthmark has been of Beyond Clean since our advent back in September. We've had a number of your colleagues on the show, and we're very happy to welcome you to today's episode.
Yep, I'm delighted to join you, and I think it's terrific what you guys are doing. So appreciate being asked and happy to be here.
Well, I know today's show is going to be very much focused on ISO certification and AMI standards and AS, where I think we're all excited to dive into that content. But let's set the table and talk about ISO as the gold standard. Is it the gold standard? And then maybe give us some background on how it intersects with sterile processing standards.
Yeah, and it's a pretty complicated weave, I suppose, if you look at it in the broadest sense. But if we focus in on device reprocessing, one of the groups that's most important in the whole ISO effort is part of the ISO TC, which stands for Technical Committee 198, which is the ISO Sterilization Standards Committee. And that group is responsible for writing a number of standards that relate to medical devices. And one of the topics, of course, is proper reprocessing of devices. And work group 12 is the work group that's responsible for writing guidance for device manufacturers as far as the information there to provide in their IFU for reprocessing of their device. And that group, in fact, just finished writing and just published ISO 17664. 2017 is the year, and that updated a document that dated back to, I think it was 2004. So anyway, it's quite a significant rewrite of that document, made it a much richer, more informative document than the one it replaced, and I think is really going to help in the long run improve the information that device manufacturers provide to healthcare facilities as far as cleaning and reprocessing their medical devices.
So, Ralph, ISO, is it possible for an SPD at an individual hospital to become ISO certified?
For sure. In fact, I know some that have. It's not a lot, but yeah, for sure. There's a couple of standards that a healthcare facility might try to get certified to. One would be 9001, and the other one would be ISO 13485. Both of those documents are very similar. If you read each one, you'd see a whole lot of overlap. And essentially, 9001 is the broader document that applies to a broader universe of organizations. And then ISO 13485 deals specifically with manufacturers of class 2 or higher class medical devices. Either one would be appropriate for a sterile processing department to certify to. One could argue they do manufacture medical devices, or they certainly make them ready for use. So 1485 would make sense. And like I said, I do know of healthcare facilities that have done that. So AMI just wrote ST and just published, it was about 2 years ago now, 3 years ago, but ST90. Actually, it just came out this, I'm sorry, we got done a couple of years ago, but it actually came out this past summer, ST90. And AMI ST90 is essentially a version of ISO 13485 written for the reprocessing departments of healthcare facilities.
So, Ralph, why would a sterile processing department decide to seek ISO certification? What does it actually mean for them?
The value of certifying would be, first of all, obviously, to be able to hang a shingle, if you will, to demonstrate that our department, our organization is committed to a level of quality and consistency and performance. And 1345 can really help a healthcare facility and a reprocessing department work on not just their documentation, which is so important, but also manage their department from the standpoint of risk. If very much the latest versions of ISO documents have taken into this whole concept of risk-based assessment and management, and looking at things from a risk-based standpoint can help a facility become a better provider, supplier to their customers, and then also zero in on those areas where they need to achieve improvement to reduce error, to reduce risk to the patient, reduce risk to the employee, and just be a better performing operation all the way around.
And I'm not totally certain about this, Ralph, but I'm pretty sure that ISO certification is part of DNV accreditation, which is obviously a competitor to the Joint Commission and one that I'm seeing pop up more and more recently. I'm not sure if you can confirm that or not, but that might be another reason why somebody might want to get that ISO certification.
Okay. I did not aware of that, so I can't speak to that.
You know, Ralph, a couple of years ago, the CMS, I guess, made headlines coming out with their 5-star rating, and there was a lot of dust in the air over that decision. But in the sterile processing space, for a while now, we have been discussing the lack of ability to compare ourselves, apart from benchmarking, but truly compare quality in the ways that, you know, those 5-star ratings, for instance, is trying to get at. Has this ISO certification, could it serve as a platform to start that more national project?
I mean, to the degree that departments would standardize on a recognized international standard, I think that might make it more plausible to compare performance. But, you know, it's a tough nut to crack. I mean, the whole benchmarking and trying to compare one facility to another. And I think the line is if you've seen one sterile processing department, you've seen one sterile processing department. I mean, there's so much unique that I think for a lot of facilities, and one of the benefits, I think, following ISO is that you benchmark against yourself. So while if as an industry we adopted it, then I think we'd be able to compare better performances at different institutions, but at the very least, it gives you the tools you need to benchmark against yourself. You know, we follow as a company, we're ISO 9001. We don't have class 2 medical devices, so 14885 doesn't apply to us. There's subtle differences, but they're basically the same, very similar documents. We primarily are benchmarking against ourselves. We don't really have a lot of, you know, we're fairly unique as a company. And there isn't a company in our size. It's hard for us to compare, you know, get data to compare to somebody else. But, you know, there's a great deal of value in just benchmarking against yourself and trying to improve over time.
I know for a lot of listeners, and myself included, we don't really know much about ISO. And so if we wanted to pursue this sort of certification, this sort of quality pursuit in our own departments, where is a good place to start?
You know, I would say the first document I would go to would be AMI ST90 because it was written from the standpoint of a reprocessing department. And if you can try to work to comply with that document, and right now there isn't a certification in place through AMI for that, that, you know, I guess it wouldn't be a surprise that were to come down the pike later on, but that would certainly be a place to start because I think one, if you're not familiar with ISO, it steps you right into that way of thinking and that model. And two, it is written from the standpoint of a reprocessing department trying to follow essentially ISO 13485. But with the terms and terminology, it would be more familiar. You know, AMI work group that wrote that, was comprised not only representatives of industry and also regulatory, but the room was, participation was very heavy from healthcare facilities. And, you know, there's a range of knowledge. Some of them, a couple of them had gone through ISO themselves, but most of the participants hadn't. So it was a good cross section to try to create a document that would make sense to people. So that's where I would encourage, facilities to start.
So, Ralph, that's great. Do you know any departments that have already gone through that process, and do you know how long it took them?
You know, I know for sure Cleveland Clinic did it, and they did that a few years ago. I don't know. For some reason, I would say it was about 2 to 3 year period. I could put you in touch with the person who could answer that directly, but
yeah, I'm pretty sure the Cleveland Clinic did go through it, and it was several years back. I know I used to work for a company that went through the ISO process, and it was a repair company, and it was also in Cleveland.
Okay.
And I think they probably went through that process about the same time as the Cleveland Clinic. And I just remember it's a lot of documentation. And I think one of the clarifying factors with ISO is, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're delivering quality. It means that you're following your processes to deliver quality, correct?
Yeah, and it does, but, you know, I do want to, I think there's been a huge change in ISO 9001 1345, where it used to feel like, and again, we've been following 9001 for quite a number of years. It used to feel like mostly you were filling out paper. I mean, you know, you were doing work to comply with a standard, but you know, a lot of times, I don't mind saying, a lot of times it didn't feel like you were doing anything that had anything to do with your business, you know, or your operation. With the newest versions of those documents, and they have gone to a risk-based assessment, all of a sudden the focus is much more on really, I would say, managing your operation, and that the what you're doing is documentation is part of it, but instead of being focused on generating all this documentation, you're actually focused on mitigating risk and managing risk. It feels like by complying with it, you're actually, it's helping you manage your operation. Several years ago, the documents that were in place at that time, a lot of times I, you know, really questioned some of the value of what we're doing, and we're just making paper. And I really think there's been a change with the latest versions of those documents and this focus on risk-based assessment and risk-based and risk mitigation.
We'll wrap this first segment. I'll just say that Hank and Mike and I got trapped into a pretty in-depth conversation about ISO a couple of months back on LinkedIn, and okay, we definitely got into the weeds on it. But I think it sometimes is a rather polarizing topic. It certainly was when we engaged LinkedIn on it. But I will say this. I think having a quality management system versus not having one is pretty much a no-brainer. And I think we've done a nice job of giving a background for what we'll dive into in segment two in just a few minutes, how ISO ties into AMI and ASTM and some other things around work groups in general. So we'll be right back with Ralph Basile. We're back with Ralph Basile, Vice President of Marketing and Regulatory Affairs for Healthmark Industries. Now we're going to get a little bit deeper into the weeds, Ralph. We're going to be talking about AMI and ASTM updates. Let's just kick it off with the background to ASTM and how it intersects with AMI and SPD.
ASTM, their official name is ASTM International. But at one time, when it was the American Society for Testing and Methods, and that's what it is. ASTM writes test methods to test virtually everything. I happen to be sitting on a vinyl couch here in a waiting room, and I know that there's ASTM methods that are being used to evaluate vinyl material here, tensile strength, cleanability, on and on. ASTM write standards that broad, and it's test method. So the ASTM writes the methods to figure out whether or not you're in compliance with AMI, ISO, and also FDA guidelines. If let's say you're supposed to get a medical device, you're supposed to validate the cleaning instructions for your medical device, AMI and also FDA guidance documents will tell you, okay, you know, you need to supply this information and you have to have done testing to demonstrate that, in fact, you do comply. ASTM writes the methods to help know what tests to do that you're then complying with AMI guidelines. So that's how ASTM in the broadest sense fits in with sterile processing. So one of the documents that, and it has to do with sterile packaging, it's ISO document, which AMI is a signatory to and participate in, and it's 11607 parts 1 and 2. And on those documents, they cite ASTM test methods. Like, for instance, there's a burst test to test the seal strength. And so ASTM F88 is a standard test method. In there, there's a test method for doing a burst test to measure the seal strength of your pouch or packaging. That's how ASTM fits in.
Glad you brought up that test for the pill pack there, Ralph, because I saw that. It must have been a couple of months ago, I guess, on an advertisement. It was a European company, I think, that was selling those test packs. But because that's not in any of the U.S. standards, is that why we don't see that? Or
yeah, so it is a standard an AMI ANSI standard, but in the U.S., we consider it a manufacturer-only document. So it applies only to medical device manufacturers. When you go over to Europe, they view those documents as applying not just to medical device manufacturers, but healthcare facilities. So that's why you do see those tests sold and used quite commonly in Europe, because the healthcare facility is trying to meet the same standards that the medical device manufacturer is. We just don't do that here in the U.S. You know, we either have manufacturer documents or we have user documents. Like ST-79, right, is a user document. And then if you go to, I mentioned the ISO 17664, that's a manufacturer document. And we make that dichotomy. So healthcare facilities here are not expected to meet the requirements of medical device documents or standards. I'm just speculating a bit, I guess, but it's just how healthcare is regulated here. As you know, the FDA does not regulate healthcare facilities. So they're looking for documents, consensus standards that they can cite that helps them manage medical device manufacturers and their compliance with FDA guidance documents and regulations. They're not looking for that on the user side because they don't regulate healthcare facilities. And I think that's part of why we see this sort of dichotomy or difference versus when you get over to Europe where there's less of a division there.
So speaking of guidance documents to manufacturers, then let's talk a little bit about Workgroup 12 and the recent news or updates regarding the instructions to manufacturers in regards to their IFUs.
Again, Amy is a member of ISO, and ISO TC-198, Technical Committee 198, not to throw too many numbers out, but it's the sterilization standards group committee of ISO. There's a Workgroup 12, that authored and just published an update to ISO 17664. Amy adopted that as an Amy document, and then also it's an ANSI document. So it's a U.S. national standard. The prior one was, I believe, 2004. This document went way further in providing guidance to device manufacturers as to the instructions they should be providing to healthcare facilities and the reprocessing of their devices. There were a couple big changes. One is the original document that it replaced only had to do with devices that were sterilized. Now, this latest version also applies to semi-critical devices. So in other words, most obvious example being flexible endoscopes, and its instructions would be provided for the reprocessing of patient-used devices. Make patient ready. So that was a huge change. And that document spends a lot more time on the steps prior to sterilization or the terminal process, if it happens to be HLD. In other words, pre-treatment of point of use, transportation of soiled items, then manual cleaning and automated cleaning of devices prior to sterilization or high-level disinfection. Much more guidance. It's a much richer document. ISO just finished that. And that was a huge step forward for the industry and will mean that device manufacturers will provide richer, more detailed instructions to healthcare facilities.
Is there any focus on trying to divide that information up? I mean, I know in many cases the IFUs do say this is the pre-cleaning, you know, this is the decon, this is sterilization, but others don't necessarily do a great job of that. And I think another thing that comes up is the sterilization parameters. They don't have a min max. They kind of do the set time, and that really puts people into kind of a funky position when there are some devices that require different exposure times versus others. So is there a focus on trying to create ranges like that so people find it easier to be in compliance without having to run multiple loads that aren't full?
Great question. Because you just anticipated where I was going to go next. So Amy Workgroup 12, which is the mirror group of the ISO workgroup. So there's Amy Sterilization Standards Committee. And then under that, there's Workgroup 12, which is the Amy workgroup that's responsible for writing guidance documents for device manufacturers and what instructions they should be providing to healthcare facilities for reprocessing their devices. Well, there's a document that actually for a long time in the U.S. was relied upon much more heavily than ISO 17664, and that is TIR 12. TIR stands for Technical Information Resource, and they're not meant as standards. The idea behind them is that they don't provide guidance, but some of them do, really. And TIR 12 did provide a lot of guidance and a lot of information to medical device manufacturers as to what goes on in the healthcare facility and what kind of information they needed to provide in order to give instructions to healthcare facilities they can actually follow. So with 17664 coming out and being a much richer document, and also I have to mention the FDA guidance document that came out in 2015 for device reprocessing also went much further than the United States. Of course, we're very focused on what the FDA says and does. So those two documents then really having come out and provide a lot more information or direction, I should say, we are now undertaking rewriting TIR-12. And the first step in that process is what you're alluding to, which we've tried to come up with categories of standard cleaning protocols, I'll refer to them as, and just a few of them. And then if I'm a device manufacturer, I might say, well, I make an osteotome. I can then follow protocol one that Amy has outlined, and my device can be cleaned that way, can be reprocessed that way. The objective is to try to come up with a few standardized cleaning protocols that will be in TIR-12 that a device manufacturer can reference and try to validate to. Because the hope is to, exactly what you're describing, reduce the incredible diversity of IFUs that are out there. That's virtually impossible, realistically, for any sterilization department to comply with.
Well, because, or the lack thereof, Ralph, because a lot of times the stainless steel instruments, you mentioned an osteotome, but the really basic ones don't really have a specific IFU to that pattern, make, and model. It's usually a more generalized commentary around cleaning and sterilization versus the more specialized instrumentation where it really gets into the weeds.
You're right. And also, too, the other thing that we deal with is obviously legacy, right? I mean, there's most of the devices in use today got cleared years ago. And if they don't change their cleaning instructions or reprocessing instructions, they don't have to go back to the FDA and revalidate them. You know, if they haven't changed the device remains the same. So what you do is you do have this, you know, backlog of devices with antiquated IFUs that provide very little detail. So how are we going to solve that? I don't, you know, in the short run, we're not. I mean, it's more of trying to put a stake in the ground. Okay, here we're giving some markers. And if you validate to that one or more of these kind of standard cleaning protocols, you know, in a few years, the population of instruments that are following those will be much greater than it is today. And I will tell you this too, and going through this process within Amy, some of the major, and I'm not comfortable mentioning their names because I don't work for them, but I will say that some major instrument companies at significant expense have gone back and revalidated their cleaning instructions, and they've gone through this process internally. Hey, can we reduce the sheer diversity of IFUs we have, because we need to make life better for our customers by trying to provide them a few standard protocols that then they have a much better chance of following. And really a significant investment on the part of these major instrument companies, but that will benefit all of us down the road. So,
well, it would also be nice if there was some language in there that allowed, to your point, why would a manufacturer of a very common basic instrument that, like you said, is legacy, why would they spend all of this money just to get it categorized into a very clear and obvious, say, level one or standard one, however you term that? Why would they go through that when it's already clear that that standard was built around specifically that type of instrumentation? So would be great to just part of that process be to say all of these types of instruments that are legacy fit right into standard one. And that way everybody kind of feels globally covered. And you also, I think, really segued beautifully into ASTM FO4-1517, the standards related to cleaning medical devices. So I wanted you to leap right off there and talk about that as far as maybe our final deep dive into some of the standards and recommendations.
And FO4-1517, a big part of the standards that we have relate to making sure devices are clean when they come off the manufacturing line. So I don't want to shortcut that, you know, it's really important. So testing for oils or particles or, you know, other contaminants, making sure that the line itself is clean, the manufacturing line itself is clean. So that's all really important to delivering safe and ready to use devices to healthcare facilities. But a lot of the work that I've been more directly involved with within the subcommittee is trying to write test methods that help manufacturers comply with AMI and FDA guidance documents. So, for instance, we've got a series that we're working on related to test soils. The first document that came out is F3208, which the title of that is Selection of Test Soils. So it's a standard guide of selection of test soils. When you're going to do your cleaning validation, what test soil formulation or formulas are appropriate based upon the clinical use of the device? That's the first in the series. The second is then details of the application of test soils to devices. What should I be doing as a device manufacturer? Where should I be soiling the device? How should I soil a device? And so it lays out methods for doing that. The third in the series, which is under draft as well, is then the extraction methods. How do I extract test soil to test whether, see, I actually am getting the device clean and determine whether or not it's clean? There's extraction, flushing, sonicating, vortexing. All these methods are outlined within that standard. And the final one, which we've not begun work on, but we do plan, is then the actual testing methods, as in what reagents, are you testing for protein? And then what test methods do you use test for protein? So how does this tie back? Well, this ties right back to ISO 17664, for instance, that says you need to do validation testing of your cleaning instructions. Well, how do I do that? This series of ASTM documents will tell you that. Another series of things that work on is brushes. Cleaning brushes, we've got almost no standards whatsoever. So how do you compare one brush from one manufacturer to another brush, whether that comes from the OEM or comes from a third party that's making brushes? How do you compare their physical characteristics? So we're working on some test methods related to evaluating and characterizing the performance of cleaning brushes. So that's another area that we're working on. Detergents is another subject area of interest, and trying to come up with some standard, identify test methods that can be used by detergent manufacturers so that they can characterize the performance. Let's say they claim detergents that are used for cleaning medical devices almost uniformly, they're supposed to be low foaming. And yet, how does a manufacturer demonstrate that they're low foaming? Let the manufacturers say don't. There's no consensus test methods for evaluating the foaming of a detergent. So these are used in other industries, but not in ours. Anyway, these are test methods that you can then characterize the performance of your brush or characterize the performance of your detergent, or be able to characterize the test soil you used in your cleaning validation and help you demonstrate that, yes, you're complying with FDA ISO AMI guidance documents.
Ralph, we've talked a couple of times now. We've made mention of work groups, and I was just kind of curious if you could fill us in. Who is on a work group, and how does someone who might be interested in all this get to be on a work group?
So if we're talking about AMI work groups, need to join AMI. If you're a device manufacturer, you need to join as a corporate member. If you're at a healthcare facility, you can join individually. Although most healthcare facilities have AMI membership, but they're just, a lot of people aren't aware of that, because usually the biomed department and a lot of facilities are a member of AMI, because a big part of AMI is biomed. I will say one of the things that AMI is just terrific at is bringing stakeholders together. And they do this within the AMI work groups and committees. And then they also will have done this when they put on special events. But when you get into the room and to talk about these, and there's consensus standards, there's supposed to be consensus standards. You have representatives from industry, from healthcare facilities, from academia, from government, and also independent consultants, independent testing labs. And you get a really good discussion between different stakeholder groups in the healthcare industry. That's the ideal. And AMI works to get balance. I will say we need more users. When we say users, we mean healthcare facilities, people that are in sterile processing departments, for instance, or in the operating room, or in endoscopy departments. We need more representation from that group. Industry is well represented there. The FDA is well represented. We do have some good participations from academicians, but we do have good involvement from ISHM, ARN, APIC, but we certainly could use more people from healthcare facilities to balance out what we produce in our work groups. AMI is very open. You could pay, I think, individual membership is, I think, $225. They have different tiers. I don't remember. But, I mean, you can join for not a lot of money, and you can attend. Again, if you're a corporate member, then to be a voting member on a committee, then you have to join as a corporate member. So there's another threshold there. But really, it's the want to, because it's not difficult once you decide you want to do it to be a participant. And I encourage anybody and all to do that.
It reminds me of many professional organizations where they're always starving for more healthcare representation at the meetings, and it's there to serve the healthcare providers as well. So yep. I would definitely yep. encourage that participation. And Ralph, unfortunately we're out of time, but what I will say is I think the most encouraging discussion we had was around the next steps in terms of guidance for manufacturers on instructions for use. I think anybody who listens to this episode is going to be very excited for that update. So I can't wait to get this out in the next couple of weeks. And again, I want to thank you for coming on the show and for Healthmark just support being such an early and active supporter of the show. It's been a big part of our success. So thank you.
Yeah. Oh, I'm pleased to do it. Thank you. Thank you for asking us. And also, by all means, if anybody wants to learn more about what's happening at AME, ASTM, ISO, and specifically in these areas too, and what's going on with Work Group 12, and shoot me an email or get a hold of me somehow. I'm happy to, I could talk about it. You can tell probably ad nauseum, and also, an enthusiastic proponent of people joining and participating. It'll just mean better documents, better guidance in the long run for all of us. So.
That was Ralph Basile, Vice President of Marketing and Regulatory Affairs for Healthmark Industries Corporation. And I'll tell you what, guys, what I love about Ralph is he's taking what I would consider to be, maybe for some of our listeners, some really dry material, but the way that he translated it for public consumption and also made it sound so exciting. I mean, it really actually legitimately is exciting to me, but the way I think he made it sound exciting to everybody else was fantastic. And again, I can't echo enough how much we've enjoyed Healthmark's support of our show.
Yeah, he had great energy. You could definitely tell that he's very passionate about this. I got to tell you, the part that I really got excited about was possibility of having sort of those generic classes of instruments that have, you know, standardized cleaning instructions for all those instruments that we don't really have IFUs for. That's great. That's a brilliant idea.
Takeaway from me, guys. Get involved. Get involved at the local level when you can, obviously, in just your basic networking groups. But get your hospital to sponsor you, to buy the membership to AME, get on a work group, actually go to those meetings. I'll be honest, you know, folks have been telling me to do that for a long time. I need to show up these meetings, be an advocate for the user in particular. And I really appreciate Ralph bringing that up today.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can support Beyond Clean by subscribing on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. If you have any topics that you would like us to cover on a future episode, or if you would like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send us an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.